All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
Welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off and stealing your money and doing all kinds of evil things with it. Broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico. I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for President of the United States, currently in the race for Governor of Texas. And today I've got a very awesome, special, close friend of mine, Nanette, who... she's been through the ringer with some of these government organizations, like the IRS and some of the Texas taxes organizations. And she's got a really, she's got a lot of information that's really, really good to know, because when I first started getting into this, I heard a lot as far as some of the Patriot mythology, and there was a lot of confusing or misleading information out there, and it's really hard to tell what's real and what's not. And some of this, you really kind of just have to get the courage up and test it out for yourself, or at least do some of your own investigation to find this out. And Nanette has done some of that. She's tested it on her own. She figured out what works and what doesn't work. And so we're going to be hearing a lot of really awesome stories from her today. Of course, before we get into that, I want to ask you to head on over to taxationistheft.info. That's our new site where we have all of our amazing swag. We've got t-shirts, we've got flags, hats. Everything that you buy goes to help to support our efforts to end taxation around the world. It helps our counter-propaganda missions of distributing information, waking people up to the idea that taxation is theft, and showing them how to avoid paying taxes into these corrupt systems that are only there to steal from us and oppress us. So head on over there and support us however you can. But now, on to the show. Nanette, how's it going?
I guess it's going as good as it can go right now.
Yeah, so you were just telling me, this is the one-man show part. I totally just didn't have my microphone in front of me while I was talking the whole time. But you've been through a lot, but you've also learned a lot, and you've learned some really, really cool tricks on avoiding the government and avoiding the taxes legally. But you've also you've come across a lot of interesting situations. So I'm going to let you tell these stories, but let's start out with the one that we were just talking about, because this is really interesting. Where it seems like somebody who's not part of the government, or maybe they're associated in some way, is using the government against you, as they're using it like a gun to steal from you. What's the story with that?
It's kind of a long story. I don't want to get too much into that part of it right now, because we're still dealing with it. And, okay. And I don't want to give away too much, but, it's a really interesting situation when, people decide that they have an interest in your property and just come after it, because in my particular situation right now, I've had no day in court. I've had no trial by jury. I've had no due process. I've had no protections under the ADA. And my property has been stolen, and I'm working now to get it back. It's quite a series of events that happened to bring it about, but the bottom line is we have laws in this country that protect us, the people, from this government. The problem is getting those enforced. it's not a matter of law. The law is there. There's lots of law. People would be shocked to actually see and know the law. And people that I've shown it to have been just completely shocked by what the law actually says. The problem is getting the courts and law enforcement to enforce and uphold the law. That's the problem we're dealing with. The government and the enforcement agencies and the police are all on the same team. And so they all have a vested interest in doing whatever it is that they want to do. And that leaves you on the side with very little resources and no help. Thankfully, there are lots of wonderful patriots who have been at this much longer than me and have taught me a lot, and who, you know, are probably much better suited for these conversations. And I think you're going to have some of them on. But, you know, they've researched for decades and decades and tried many things. And, you know, many of them have gone to jail. Many have just had their lives ruined and their properties taken and stolen. And it's been incredibly difficult for not only myself, but the ones that came before me and taught me all of the stuff that, you know, I'll be sharing some with you tonight.
Right. And it's extremely frustrating too, because of course, they have so many laws that they enforce that do nothing but assault Americans. The drug war, for example, they'll spend all of their time and resources enforcing these laws, which there is no victim, and yet when there actually is a victim, they don't want to enforce it. They don't want to do anything about it. We heard that a couple weeks ago when we talked to Josh Butterfield, where he had there was a basically a predator working at his daughter's school, and all the school board would do is move him from school to school to another school until he got caught again. They wouldn't enforce the law. They couldn't get a police officer to arrest anyone. And there was even a law saying that it was illegal for the school staff not to report this or not to notify the parents, which they didn't. And nobody would arrest that school staff. And of course, everyone would just pass the buck. The police would say, talk to the DA. The DA would say, talk to somebody else. But at the same time, there are these, you know, these other laws that they're just, you know, they're picking and choosing what they want to enforce and whatever suits them best.
That's what happens. That's exactly what happens. It happens in the courts and it happens, you know, in the streets. And I've seen it in both. And the only thing I've seen be effective is fighting back. And you have to be prepared for some blowback and some problems and, you know, for them to test you to find out, do you really know? And, you know, I, like many others, when I first started really bucking back, I kind of always have. There are certain things I've always known and stayed away from and things like that, because I learned at a very, very young age that all of this was going to happen. I mean, my parents told me about, you know, they're going to try to make you slaves and the mark of the beast and all of that. And, you know, you're going to have to make a decision at some point in your life. You're going to do the right thing or you're not. You're going to go into the system. And I've tried to do my best to stay out of the system. And there has been some cost, but it wasn't near the cost that my brave American brothers and sisters have faced in Vietnam, in World War II, in World War I, in the Civil War, the Revolutionary War. What I've gone through is nothing compared to them. I'm still have a home, you know, I still have somewhere to stay, and, you know, I'm not being shot at. So I consider that I have it very easy, although it has been very difficult. There were quite a few arrests and quite a bit of harassment. There's been quite a few years of PTSD and anxiety and sleepless nights. But like I said, it's nothing compared to, you know, what our military have faced in protecting our constitution and our freedom and our country. So I feel like it's what everybody needs to do. Everybody needs to stand up. And I'll give you just a quick example. It's a little bit off topic of the taxes, but in a way it also is the same thing. In that, you know, these revenuers, these cops out on the street, you know, when the cops stop you on traffic stuff, that's all revenuing. That's all taxation in another form.
Right.
And, you know, I was getting stopped and harassed all the time, just really going through a hard time. And I stood up to them and I fought them for a good while. And I have filed a lot of documents, which, you know, be happy to tell people about, you know, time permitting. But I've done a lot to defend myself. And I went from being stalked, harassed. I mean, every single time I left my house, I had to be prepared to not come back right away. And I had to have bail money on me. And, you know, like mom always said, make sure you have on clean underclothes, because I just never knew if I was coming back or not. And I went from that to now I've been stopped in the same town a couple of times in the last few weeks. And it was a really amazing turnaround from my last encounters with them. I was stopped, and basically it wasn't pretty, Dan. It was not pretty. I was not on my best behavior, and I cussed these cops. I yelled at them. I cussed them. I dropped a lot of F-bombs. I told them no to everything. The only thing I did do was give them my passport. I ordered them around. I barked at them. I mean, if you wanted to hear the whole story, I would tell it, but it's pretty ugly. I'm telling you, it was a bad scene. I mean, I was awful. And just totally disagreeable. And in the last, one of the officers said, well, he was trying to be good cop, and he said, well, can't you just give him your phone number? And I said, F no. And I was just screaming. And I said, you need to either arrest me or let me go. And he said, ma'am, we're trying not to arrest you. And, you know, the only way we would arrest you is if you didn't sign the ticket. If he writes you a ticket, are you going to sign it? And I said, F no. And they, you know, tried their best to get me to agree with them, to give them my information, give them my papers, sign their ticket, do whatever. I did none of it. They did their best to convince me to slow down, to follow the speed limit. I told them it had nothing to do with me. And then I got my passport back, floored the gas, hit 40 before the next stop sign, and went home and went, my God, what just happened? What just happened? I mean, number one, I completely lost my mind to be even attempting that. But number two, that that it worked, that I apparently have them enough on notice that they're not doing the little illegal things. Now, they're still doing the big illegal things, like, you know, stealing my house, but... You know, I went from being stalked to being totally non-compliant, totally rude, totally really bad, disgusting behavior. And they let me drive away. Whereas before, I mean, I could be sitting at home and they would write me tickets and arrest me anytime I walked out of my house. So... It's quite a change, and if I hadn't have fought them, if I hadn't have stood up, and if I hadn't have learned what I've learned, we would have been still back at the beginning where they were harassing me and getting away with it. And in the beginning, they did, and like I said, they test you. They will test you. They want to know, do you know what you're talking about? And when the second they see you don't know, they go in for the kill. So... You know, but once you learn, you know, and you really know, and you let them know, you know, they tend to back off a little bit. Right. So the only thing I know that works is fighting them. And if you don't fight them, you're going to get taken by them. I can tell you, because it happened to me.
And so you're, you said you gave them your passport. You don't have a driver's license?
No.
So, I mean, that's an interesting one. I haven't had one in, I don't know, 12 years now either.
Yeah, me too.
And it's interesting because when, well, let me ask you, the first time you decided that you weren't going to use a driver's license and you were still going to drive, or we don't call it driving, but normal travel. People call that driving. What was going through your head? Were you scared about that? Were you worried that maybe this wasn't true, that you were just taking a huge risk, or, you know, what were you thinking?
I was thinking that they were making me a criminal and I wasn't going to have it. I was young and, I was poor. And so I didn't have insurance and sometimes not even tags and whatever, just because I didn't have the money for it. And I'm sorry, my lips are a little dry. And what had happened was I had gotten stopped several times and gotten tickets for, you know, tags and insurance. And so after a couple of insurance tickets, then they suspend your license. And then when they suspend your license and you still go to work and you get caught, then they start, you know, with the more serious tickets. And after like a couple of those, you end up in like real like criminal court, like the district, downtown district court. Right. You're not like in the, you're not in the JP court. They escalate it. And, you know, and then they're telling me, you know, I'm charged with a crime. I mean, it's a misdemeanor, but it's still a crime. And I'm like, how did y'all make me a criminal just for me trying to go to work? And so, that's when I decided that I was getting rid of that license. And I just knew that it was the license that was causing me the issue. It was because of that license being suspended that I was getting in trouble. So I said, okay, I'm going to fix the problem with my license and then I'm going to get rid of the license and then I won't have that problem anymore. And, you know, I haven't either. I mean, they've tried. They try to charge you with things, but, you know, you look up the words and, you know, first they tried to get me driving with suspended and I said, it's not suspended. It's expired. I just let it run out. and never renewed. I understand that you can send it back and revoke it, but I just let mine run out. Mm-hmm. And but I made sure they were paid before that, because when you have that license, you are in a contract, and so you have to fulfill the obligations of the contract. So their stupid contract says we have some kind of law that says that, you know, you got to pay us money and jump through these hoops. And so I did that. And so I made sure that everything was taken care of. I let it expire. And I haven't been, they haven't been able to charge me with any kind of crime since then. Because I'm not under contract with them. Now they've tried, and but
oop, we just lost you. That looks like an internet problem. Let's see if she comes back. But this is really interesting. I know I went through the same process myself. And one of the most telling signs was that I looked up in the actual code what the penalty was for driving without a license and driving with a suspended license. And as it turns out, driving without a license, there's almost no penalty at all. Versus driving with a suspended license, that's a misdemeanor. And I had to think, like, why was this? How could this happen? I think Nanette's back.
Am I back?
You're back.
Oh, wow. Hey, that's good, because I am not good at computers, so I did pretty good then.
Awesome.
Yay.
So I was just filling people in that you know, when I kind of made that transition myself, I looked up the penalty for driving without a license and compared it to driving on a suspended license. And for some reason, driving without a license was like almost nothing, and driving with a suspended license was right up there next to murder.
Right. I've had way less problems. Financial charges, you know, as far as driving, they tried to get me on some criminal charges, but they couldn't. It just, and so I just write a response to the court, and it gets dismissed.
Right.
They're not real happy about it.
They've got us so well brainwashed, because, I mean, you know, from like, what, middle school or high school, they tell us, well, driving is a privilege, not a right.
Yes.
And they tell us, they just beat it into our heads so much that it's like, it becomes like natural to think, oh yeah, no, the thought of traveling down a highway in a machine that I paid for with my own money, if I don't have that special paper from government, is a crime. That's
unbelievable.
It's insane. But it takes, well, I want to ask you this though, because you said your parents kind of started teaching you these things really early, like you mentioned, watching out for the mark of the beast and that sort of thing. And what was your opinion hearing that stuff? Did you believe it when you heard it, or was it like, oh, mom, you're crazy?
No, I absolutely believed it. And you know, I was only 4 years old. I was the baby of the family, and it made a great impression on me because, you know, they called a family meeting for this. And so this, you know, they're about to tell us something serious here. And this is what they said. You know, they basically said, look, here's the world you live in. Here's what it's like. Here's what's going to happen. Here's what's going on. And here's what you need to do. And you're going to have to make a choice in your life. They said they're moving us into a slave system. They're going to try to enslave the world and all of God's people. And you have to make a decision of if you go into that system or if you don't. Now, if you don't take the mark of the beast, it may mean starving in a ditch. But that's the choice that you're going to have to make. And at 4 years old, I decided, okay, well, I'll do the right thing, you know, because this is important. I know this is important. My parents are really impressing something on me right now. So I made the decision then, and then I found that in my 40s, I was having to live up to that. You know, when I started buying properties and, you know, I didn't want to contribute to the financial house of cards that we have built in this country. Every time you deposit money into a bank, that allows that bank to loan 9 times that amount. And so if and when it ever, you know, somebody flicks that bottom card, it's all coming tumbling down, and I just don't want to contribute to that. So I was depositing as little money into the bank as possible, and I didn't want to deposit the money to buy these homes. And so they will tell you it can't be done. You can't buy houses with green money, and you can. But your real estate agent will tell you you can't. The title company will tell you you can't. And, right. You know, the attorney will, he might tell you if you get the right one.
I would imagine that the only limitation on that should be you might have fewer people willing to sell to you because they want it in a wire transfer or something else, or in an escrow through a bank. But you're right. They'll tell you that that's the way you have to do it because they're bureaucrats, basically. They're like, no. This is the procedure we do. This is how we're going to do it. And it's nuts. And it's like, I've heard of people getting into this fight too, where when you sign when you sign all the contracts to transfer ownership, the deed and the title and everything else, that's when you sign the HOA agreement. And I've heard of people saying, no, I'm not going to sign. I'll sign all this stuff, but I'm not going to sign the HOA agreement. And yep. So now they're not in the HOA, and it pisses off the real estate agents because they don't know what to do because they're just taught procedure. Oh yeah. You get a stack of papers and you have to sign all of them. And it's the same thing with the police. The police are ultimately bureaucrats. They pull you over and they have a list of procedures to follow. And if you stop them up and say, oh, no, I don't have a license, then they say, okay, well, I'm going to issue a ticket for not having a license. But then you say, oh, but no, I don't need a license. And then they're like, wait a minute, what do you mean? You point out the law to them. Like I used to have a Mexican driver's license that I would use. And I would show that to them, and they were all kinds of confused. Well, what do we do with this? It's absolutely insane. I had a car that was unregistered and they couldn't find it in their system. So what do we do with this? They would spend an hour like calling dispatch. Well, I don't know. It doesn't come up anywhere. Like it's like a ghost. And they just don't know what to do because so, going back to your point about realtors. Yeah, they're all part of the system. They're all part of like the, you know, they have their little realtor licensing club, which teaches them all, you know, all the way to do things. You have your CPAs and accountants who teach, you know, who are taught how to do your taxes, but never taught that not everyone's supposed to do taxes. It's a government system. It's government conditioning, and they've conditioned the experts to believe the bullshit. So now, when you want to know what to do with your life, you go to an expert, and then the experts give you the same bullshit that the government gives you, but it's bullshit.
Yeah, and it's sad, but unfortunately, some of the experts don't even know. I was on another interview, and one of the women on the panel was an attorney. And as we were talking about one of my tax cases, And I said, well, you know, for example, they had my case dismissed under the Rooker-Feldman doctrine. And the Rooker-Feldman doctrine has been interred. And she said, what? And I said, oh, yeah, interred over a generation ago. And so even the attorneys don't know. And it has been citizens that have found this stuff. In particular, that little trick right there was found by Richard Cornforth, who is one of my great mentors who I love and adore. And I suggest that everybody check out his materials at richardcornforth.com. Great teacher, great, I would say, scholar of the law. He certainly knows more, or at least tells you more than most attorneys. But, you know, here we have attorneys that don't even know the law. Right. We have judges that don't know the law. We have police officers out enforcing the law, and they don't even know what it is they're enforcing. You know, I mean, they don't even understand the Constitution or the, you know, the difference between constitutional law and codes, and, you know, who that applies to. And so that's why every time I get pulled over, I immediately call for a supervisor, and I don't answer questions. I don't give them any information. I ask them, why are you pulling me over? What's the emergency? You have your emergency lights on. You're blocking traffic now with me pulled over here. What's the emergency? And, you know, they'll try to tell you, well, you know, you made an improper lane change, or you were speeding. And that's not an emergency. There's specific reasons that are emergency why they can turn on and utilize those lights. So I hit them with that. I hit them with, what's your probable cause? Well, you were speeding. Well, that's not probable cause. And then I always call for a supervisor. And I tell them, you know, either arrest me or let me go. If they want me to sign a ticket, I say, take me to the magistrate. Let's go right now. Let's go to the magistrate. I demand it. Anytime they want to start talking about a ticket, I want to demand to go to the magistrate right away.
There was something you just said. Probable cause. You said speeding is not probable cause. Can you explain that?
Well, I'm in Texas, and you can look in your state. You can probably just Google, but in Texas, in the Texas Transportation Code, and I'd have to pull it up to, it gets 901.024 maybe. Couldn't swear to that, but if you'll Google, I'll give you a phrase to Google and you can find it. But it clearly states who these stop signs, speed signs, yield signs, merge signs, all the traffic signs are for. And so if you, like in Texas, you could Google Texas Transportation Code speed signs, and it should pull you up that code. And you can read it for yourself, because it tells you clearly who that stuff is for. And it is not for the average traveler. It is for commercial drivers, which also brings me to the driver's license issue. There's only two kinds of license in Texas. And one is the temporary, and the other is a commercial. So there, if you're not a commercial driver, in other words, if you're not driving a tractor trailer, semi-tractor trailer, a bus carrying passengers or cargo for hire, then those signs don't apply to you, and there is no license for you. Now, they'll give you one, and it says operator class C, but you can't find an operator class C license in the transportation code. There is no such thing. There's also several Supreme Court rulings in Texas and in the U.S. courts that state that there is no license and driving without a license is no offense. So the speed signs don't have anything to do with just a regular traveler, and that's why speeding or any traffic infringement is not probable cause to pull somebody over. They have to have probable cause that you've committed a crime.
Right.
And, you know, speeding is not a crime.
So I just looked up the, I think you were right, with the number 201.904 speed signs.
Oh, I think I had it a little bit backwards, but anyway.
And yeah, no, this is really interesting because I know, like, with the driver's license one, it says, like, it's, you read the driver's license requirement and you're like, okay, that sounds like that's me. And then you have to look up the other definitions before you really get it. But this one sounds pretty obvious. So for speed signs, it says, the department shall erect and maintain on the highways and roads of this state appropriate signs that show the maximum lawful speed for commercial motor vehicles, truck tractors, truck trailers, truck semi-trailers, and motor vehicles engaged in the business of transporting passengers for compensation or hire, in parentheses, buses. It doesn't say anybody else. So those speed
right.
signs are for trucks.
Right.
That's really interesting.
Right.
And this is like one of those red flags that's like, and this is in, you know, just so you know, this isn't like in some special division where like, okay, yeah, but there's another part that applies to other people. This is chapter 201, general provisions and administration, subchapter A, general provisions. So this is general Texas Department of Transportation. But this is the whole scam, and this is how the income tax scam works. This is how so many scams work, is they make, because they have the right you could argue that they never had that right to regulate commerce in the first place, but let's just say that that's the one constitutional, authority that they do have out of all of this. They take that, they create a law under that, and then they convince everybody that, oh yeah, well, we passed this law, so it applies to you.
Well, what they do is they create a code and or a regulation, and you have to make sure that it's an actual statute, you know, because it's not a law until it goes through the legislature. And a lot of times they want to kind of forget or skip that step.
Right.
And,
they've delegated,
you know, and a lot of times they'll just tell you something that's flat not true. I mean, listen, to their credit, some of them, a lot of them don't even know what the law is. It's not that every government person you deal with is evil. That's not the case. A lot of them just don't know.
Right. They're trained. I mean, this is the thing. Like, you know, first of all, there's a billion pages of laws. Not every police officer is going to go out and read all of them. If somebody has forged a check in your name and you call, you know, you wave down a traffic officer, he's not going to know how to handle that. He's not trained.
Right.
All he's trained is traffic laws. He's a traffic cop. Maybe like domestic disputes and some little calls that he's going to get called to. But if he's handed a case of credit card fraud or something else, he doesn't know how to handle that. If he stops a truck that's transporting, something that's completely illegal that he has no idea what it is. It doesn't look like a gun. It doesn't look like drugs. Okay, well, I don't know what it is. I guess I can't arrest you, right? He lets it go. Because they're trained on specific procedures. They have other departments and other officers who are trained, you know, what to do when there's counterfeit checks or credit cards are stolen or anything like that. They create special task forces. But even then, those people are knowledgeable in specific some specific laws, but in general, you know, that's the DA's job. That's the prosecutor's job. For them, it's, oh, well, my supervisor said I could stop you because of XYZ, and, you know, you were doing one of those, so I'm going to stop you. And then they said I could give you a ticket and all these other things. And the rest of it, they just kind of have to fill in the gaps on their own. They're not lawyers. They don't have law degrees. And that's never the expectation. And they don't even get that much training.
Right. It makes it really difficult because a lot of them think they're doing the right thing. Right. You know, even like the judges in the courts, they think they're doing the right thing. When really all they're doing is revenueing and breaking the Constitution, breaking the oath that they swore, and, you know, further debilitating their country and their countrymen.
Right.
And they don't even realize it.
Well, here's an interesting thought too. And I've always wondered about this because I have friends who have run for judge or for peace, justice of the peace. What's interesting is you don't need to be a lawyer to run or to get elected or to become a judge.
Right.
And what do you think happens your first day of work? You show up and it's like a job. You just walk in and say, oh, I know how this all works. I'm the judge now. Everybody has to follow my orders. Even though technically it is now your court, how does that really work? You go in there and all of the people, all the staff and employees who have been there are going to train you. They're going to say, this is the schedule. Yeah. This is how it works. These are the cases you get assigned. Don't worry. Yeah. Just go. We'll tell you when to go sit in the court. We'll bring the cases up to you and we'll deal with all that. So that means all of this stuff that's going on inside of your court as the judge of this court, the person who has the authority to determine what goes on in this court, all of this other stuff is going along, and most people never question it. They never question what's going on. How do the cases get chosen? How do the cases get decided which goes to which judge? Do they even ask that question? A lot of them probably not. They're there. They won their political race. They're a politician now. They're a judge now. They're just going to go with what the court's doing. They don't want to deal with that anyways, for the most part.
Well, you know, I recently had one call me and ask me what to do.
Wow. A judge.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Well, he had his girl call me, but she told me the judge wanted me to call you and ask you what you wanted him to do. I mean, my life is so bizarre sometimes. It really never ceases to amaze me. But I was given a ticket in Montgomery County. And, you know, I wrote a response, you know, this is BS, whatever, whatever. And I didn't go to court. And I told them I wouldn't be, and they went ahead and issued a warrant, and I just started issuing my own warnings as per the law, you know, to give, it's called notice and opportunity to cure. So, you know, before you just go attack somebody, you've got to give them some notice and an opportunity to fix the situation. So I started sending out constructive notices and, you know, notice an opportunity to cure. And I notified my sheriff and the JP and the courts. And then they withdrew the warrant for a good while. And then I don't know if it was like their computer system automatically kicks it back in or something, but it showed back up again. And again, I wrote everybody and, you know, this time, you know, I really let them know, look, if you want to pursue this, I will sue. And I will sue not only the JP court for harassment, but I will also sue the sheriff and the deputy who stopped me. And, then it kind of went away for a little while, and then it came back up again recently. And it was during the time that I was moving from my home, and I knew the constables were going to be coming to put me out. It had been raining and we didn't have time to move before the deadline, and had actually moved 30 hours straight up to the deadline. And I was worried, you know, the constables are going to show up and I have a ticket. I don't want them to have any reason to be able to arrest me or anything. So I called the JP court and said, hey, I need to find out about this ticket. And they said, you have two failures to appear. And I said, okay, how can I get that handled? And they said, you can come up and pay us $40 for each one and we'll reset your court date. And I said, okay, great. That sounds like a good thing. So I headed up there, and when I got there, she filled out a little paper for me and told me, keep this on you in case you get stopped. And I said, okay. And I just kind of stood there, and she kind of looked at me like, okay, what do you want? And I said, I need to pay and lift the warrants. And she said, no, they're lifted. And I said, but I need to pay. And she said, no. And put her hands up just like that and stepped back. No. And I was looking at this like, what is going on again in bizarro world? But I was like, okay, you know, it saves me $80. I'm not going to worry about it. I got my little paper. So I went on about my way, and I decided I better go ahead and file an answer because I'm moving. I'm fighting these tax cases. I don't want to end up in an issue over this. So I'm just going to go ahead and send him an answer. And that way I've got it handled. So I sent over an answer to the JP court. And then a few weeks later, I get a call from the court, and she tells me she's from the JP court and that the judge asked her to call and find out what I wanted him to do. And she had woke me up, and I was like, what? And she said, well, you sent in this answer, but this answer is a civil answer. And I said, yes. And she said, well, we didn't know what to do with it. And I said, you file it into the case. And she said, but it's a civil answer. And again, I said, yes. And she said, well, and I said, are you telling me I'm charged with a crime? And I said it just like that. Am I charged with a crime? And she said, well, it's a and she was fumbling around. She didn't know whether to say misdemeanor or citation or what crime. She was like, it's a citation. And I said, yes. And she said, and you sent us a civil answer. And I said, okay. So are you telling me I'm charged with a crime? And she said, it's a citation. And the judge just asked that I call you and ask you what you wanted him to do. And I kind of laughed. And I said, well, he's the judge. He can do whatever he wants to do. And she said, yeah, but I just kind of don't understand. And I said, yeah, I get that, honey. But I mean, I filed an answer. I promised to file an answer, and I filed my answer. And she said, but the judge wanted to know what you wanted him to do. And again, I laughed and I said, well, you tell him that I said he's the judge and he can do whatever he wants to do. And she goes, okay.
I wonder what would have happened if you didn't pick up the phone and like they weren't able to find their outside answer to this great mystery.
It's just amazing to me that, like, really, the judge is calling you and telling you to ask me to tell him what to do. Really? Right.
But it's interesting, too, because it's almost like they're trying to, and I don't know if they're doing this intentionally or what, but it's almost like they're trying to set up a trap and letting you make the move. So, for example, I had a conversation with somebody's asking who was your mentor again, and that was Richard.
I've got a few of them, and I will tell everybody. And also, I'm going to be hopefully soon. I'll be doing some podcasts to actually teach the actual laws and show everybody where this stuff is at. And my mentors are going to be joining me. So you'll get to talk to them as well and ask questions. And we're all really excited about it. But for right now, you can look up Richard Cornforth, and it's richardcornforth.com. You can also see some of his videos on YouTube. Secrets to the Legal Industry, Secrets of the Legal Industry. And then also there's a great man named Carrie Zolman. Carrie's thing is jurisdiction. He does everything under jurisdiction. And now Carrie, though, you can find his videos on the Republic of Texas websites or YouTube channel. I think it's RT, but I think you can search YouTube for Republic of Texas.
We'll find it and put a link in there.
They have his calls. They're called a jurisdiction conference call. So look for Carrie Zolman's jurisdiction conference calls. Now, what's great about Carrie is Carrie will teach you how to play these guys' game. How to, you know, how attorneys end up like tricking you, you know, like they use word salad and they box you into saying something you didn't mean to say. He teaches you how to avoid that and how to put it back on them where, you know, where they're not on such solid footing anymore. So, I love listening to Carrie Zolman. I still do it. I have been doing it for years, and I still do it because it's a skill. To Carrie, it comes very naturally, and you'll see that with him. He's got one of those minds that just works a different kind of way. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But for some of us, me especially, it takes diligent practice and exposure to hearing him with the patter and listening to people practice. And then one day after listening to him for a really long time, it'll just click and you'll go, oh, I got this. And then you just run circles around these attorneys and they don't know what to do. I mean, the attorneys were literally, you know, putting their hand to their forehead and looking at each other and just exasperated. But there was nothing they could do with me because I was answering correctly and I was answering. So,
and this is the story I was about to tell, I was fighting a traffic ticket. I was in court, in California. It was a regular citation. And they do this thing where they say, oh, the judge is in here, but if you want to, we have a judge pro tem that's going to hear your case. It's basically a Judge Judy court. So if you want to sign this thing and waive all your rights, you can be heard here, or you can object and go in front of a real judge. And so I objected and I went in front of a real judge and I argued that he had no jurisdiction. And it was really interesting because I said, I have no contract with the state of California, with the city of Los Angeles or anybody else. I told them that I was I signed that citation under duress. I told them that the citation was not issued on city property, and all these other things, and therefore they didn't have jurisdiction. And this judge, who was an elected judge at this point, kept going back. You know, he came up with some interesting questions, and he was like, but this court has jurisdiction. This is the Los Angeles Superior Court. We have jurisdiction over Los Angeles. And I didn't know how to explain. And this was at the point, you know, the very beginning of the trial where he was asking me to enter a plea. And I refused to enter a plea because he had no jurisdiction. As soon as you enter a plea, you have no right to object to jurisdiction. And so he put a couple questions to me that I knew I was right. I mean, I was still kind of fuzzy because I was still learning these things, but I had no idea how to explain this. And so he put the ball in my court and he said, well, so how do you want to plea? He didn't say, so what do you want to do? Because if he would have asked, well, what do you want to do? I would have said, I want you to dismiss the case, right?
But so I want to go home.
Yeah. He just kept asking me, so how do you plea? And in my head, you know, still being conditioned to the way that the system works, I felt like I had to answer his question with a valid answer or else we would never proceed any further. And so, like, I said not guilty, and that was just a huge mistake. I should never have said that. And
right,
because ultimately, like, you know, that's what he wanted. And so, like, he was extremely patient in asking the same question over and over and over again and holding his ground and not dismissing the case because, like you said, he was testing me. He wanted to see how much I knew, how far I was willing to go to defend this. So
that's what I told you. They'll test you.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he was testing you and you failed because you let him get past the jurisdiction
right.
question. But that is one that Cornforth will answer for you. And there's a couple of things. I mean, they have to have a party. They have to, under the rules of evidence, 601 in the federal rules of evidence, not 601, 602 and 603, in federal rules of evidence, talk about, having a competent witness with firsthand knowledge of the facts. So, they don't have that. You know, they don't have a victim who has a claim against you, and the officer can't have a claim against you.
You need to have an adversary in the case. You need to have the plaintiff, which they
right.
will tell you is the state of California or the state of Texas, wherever you are, the people of the state of California versus, you know, so-and-so. And it's like, but wait a minute, I'm one of those people. And I'm not making any claim against me. You're making a claim against me on behalf of all these other people who really couldn't care less.
So
which one of them is making that complaint against me?
Well, in order to make a complaint, they have to have some kind of damage or claim. So
right.
let's see who signed, Your Honor, that has a damage or a claim.
Right.
A lot of times what they'll do is the DA or the cop will sign the complaint. But they have to be willing to swear that they have a claim against you and testify to what the damages are, and they can't do that.
Under penalty of perjury.
Right. Right. So none of them are going to do it when you ask them to get on the stand. So they don't have and you know, another thing is venue versus jurisdiction. It's a very tricky one to get your head around.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times the judge is talking about venue. We handle these kind of cases all the time. I handle
right.
these traffic cases all day long. This is a traffic court. Yes, Your Honor.
Well, I
that's
speed
venue.
All day
that's
long.
That's not jurisdiction. Yeah, that's venue. That's not jurisdiction.
Right.
Jurisdiction means he has a claimant properly seated before him with a valid claim who's a proper witness. The witness has to have firsthand factual knowledge. So an attorney can't testify. A cop, if he was not there when it happened, can't testify. It has to be somebody with firsthand factual knowledge.
Right.
So There's like several reasons why they don't have jurisdiction, but they are going to test you. So you have to know those reasons. Right. And you have to be willing to and know how to question them back. And that's the hard one, what we were, you know, missing for so long. And Cornforth has really good information on that.
Right. So we're at the end of the show, and I know we could keep talking for hours. This is really great stuff. You always have so much useful information. But I want to give you an opportunity if you want to, I know you're working on some new projects that aren't up yet, but if you just want to promote anything, if you want to shout out some names of some people that have some great information, I just want to give you an opportunity to go ahead and do that so we can share some knowledge here.
Okay, great. Well, like I said, Richard Cornforth is a really good one. And then Carrie Zolman, Zolman. I think they spell it wrong on the Republic of Texas. They might put Zohlman. But anyway, you can look for him on the Republic of Texas YouTube channel and look for his jurisdiction calls. And then just listen to them over and over and over. And you'll hear the same thing 100 times or 1,000 times. But until it clicks, you need to keep listening.
Repetition.
And then I have I'm just starting a brand new YouTube channel that's Lay Law, where we're going to teach law to, you know, lay people. This is not law school for lawyers, and we're not lawyers. We're lay people, and we're going to show lay people where we have found the law and where you can use it to defend yourself and answer questions like the one you just asked, like, how do I answer this jurisdiction thing? Because, see, that's what was happening to me in the beginning. And over the years, I've learned more and more, and I know how to get through their hoops. So now the courts are calling me a bully. You know, they have 3 national law firms up against me, 15 attorneys. I have a 9th grade education, and they're calling me a bully.
Yep.
That's interesting. So it must mean that I'm stepping on some toes, and we want to put all that information out on the Lay Law YouTube channel, which I'll be putting out stuff just as fast as I can. Like I said, I've been having technical difficulties, but, and then I'd love to come back on with you sometime and talk more about IRS and about the property tax thing, what people need to look for to know how to fight this property tax thing and this IRS thing. I'd love to share that data.
And I want to point out that this was actually, this was actually how we connected. So, and this was like a long time ago. I made a post something about, has anybody actually tried something with the IRS? And you sent me a message, which ended up in my spam box. And then, like, months and months later, we finally connected and had a lot of really great conversations about all of this stuff. And I know you've been through a lot, but you've also learned a lot. So I definitely want to have you back on to share some more of that knowledge.
Thank you.
But for now, thank you so much for joining me tonight. And I'm going to post a lot of these links under the description. So if you want to check out the description, a lot of the links will be there. And of course, if you're listening to this live on Facebook or YouTube, make sure you share it. Make sure you comment, even just to say hi. Make sure you like and share everything. Tag your friends. And if you're listening to this on the podcast, please make sure you subscribe and do whatever you can to share this and share this information with others, because this is really important. This is how we win this fight against a tyrannical government that is really at our throats right now. We win this with knowledge, and this is I'm working as hard as I can to bring you the knowledge that's going to help us get through this. So please do that, and of course, head over to taxationistheft.cards and support this podcast with your purchase of any of our awesome swag. Thank you so much, guys, and have a good night. We'll see you next time. Taxation is theft.